Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. The Golden Gate National Recreational Area contains some of the Bay Area's most beautiful shorelines, including Ocean Beach, Crissy Field, Fort Funston, the Marin Headlands, Stinson Beach, Muir Beach, Fort Baker, Rodeo Beach, extending all the way down to San Mateo County, encompassing Marin counties and San Francisco County as well. About 80,000 acres in all. Since the 1970s, when many of these areas became part of the GGNRA, residents have enjoyed these places with their dogs. Now the National Park Service is completing a lengthy, decades-old public process and has issued new proposed rules which limit the areas available to dogs and their owners, both on-leash as well as off-leash. And so these rules have proved to be quite controversial, as you might imagine. So tonight, we'll be talking to individuals on all sides of the issue. So starting with the superintendent of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area to talk about the proposed changes, I welcome Christine Leonards.
Thanks so much.
And then, of course, we're joined by two guests who oppose the changes. First, Supervisor Scott Wiener of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined here in the studio by Sally Stevens, chair of the San Francisco Dog Owners Group. Welcome, Sally.
Hi. Thank you for having me here.
Great. And by phone, we're joined by Brent Plater. He is executive director of the environmental group Wild Equity, who supports the GGNRA's plan based on environmental concerns. Welcome, Brent.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes. The number to dial is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or post a tweet at cityvisionskalw. So, Superintendent Christine Leonards, I wanted to start with you. Let's outline the plan in its basic parts. Tell us, what exactly is this proposal planning to change?
You've given your listeners, I think, a really good description of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And it's 60 miles from stem to stern, from Marin County through San Francisco County and then down into San Mateo. We were created in 1972. We're part of a collection that's now 410 units of the National Parks System. And the proposed rule around dog management, as you've said, reflects many years of planning. And the guidelines that are created in the proposed rule are to really outline those places in the park where people would be able to enjoy the park with their dogs, both on and off leash, as well as places where people can recreate where there aren't dogs. So the way we've taken this approach is to really look at the areas in the national park where there are opportunities for dogs and recreation to also meet the mandate of GGNRA. So we have 22 different locations where dogs will be allowed in GGNRA, where they've been allowed for years, and 7 locations where dogs will be allowed off-leash. So in 5 different areas, and let me just go through, in Marin County, Rodeo Beach. In San Francisco, we have Fort Mason and Ocean Beach, both locations that will allow dogs off-leash. And then at Crissy Field, 2 areas where dogs will be allowed off-leash, down on the beach as well as in the uplands. And then at Fort Funston, 2 areas as well, down on the beach and in the uplands.
So tell me a little bit more, because it's a lot of numbers and a lot of ground to cover, literally. What exactly is changing here in terms of percentages of land that are currently available for dog walking that are changing, or the types of changes that are occurring, either changing from any dog walking to no dog walking, or off-leash to on-leash?
You know, it's a lot of information, just as you've said. And the best way, really, to get that information is to go onto the website for the park, www.nps.gov/GOGA. And you can go to the dog management planning section, where we've got maps available. And it really breaks things down into the specifics about what people might want to know that's close to home for them, so they can really see some of those details. You know, what the proposed rule does, really, is identifies those places where people can enjoy, as I've said, off-leash, on-leash, leash or no dog areas. Part of what drives us, some of the objectives include, you know, there's lots of conflicts, unfortunately, that happen when dogs off leash aren't managed well. Now, most of the people who come to Golden Gate with their dogs have well-mannered dogs that are well-managed. But we have enough conflicts between groups of users and recreationalists at GGNRA that we believe that we need to put in place some rules that provide more clarity. When the park was first established, we had about 1.5 million visitors that came to GGNRA in the mid-1970s. Now we get almost 18 million visitors. We know the population of the Bay Area is going to projected to go from 7.1 million people today to a population of 9.2 million in 25 years. So this is really a forward-looking plan. It looks to the future in a way that we can both protect the natural and cultural resources of this special national park unit, as well as provide opportunities, the only park in the nation that will allow dogs off-leash out of 410 different park units.
So you're mentioning that one of the major reasons to do this is because of the increasing conflict, in part due to the increasing population and therefore increasing dogs, I imagine.
Right.
Are there other concerns that led to this process? And how has the process shifted in the number of years that have passed since this proposed change was first an idea?
One of the things that we've heard from the public is that they need certainty. They'd like to have certainty around where dogs can be brought to the park. And the park was established in 1972. By 1978 or so, it was clear that that dogs off leash and the dog opportunities that the park really had inherited, these were lands that came from military lands, from the city and county of San Francisco, that already had the opportunity for people to walk their dogs on it. And it's a wonderful opportunity, but had led to some conflicts. And so in 1979, a pet policy was put into place. And then over the succeeding 37 years, there's been some roller coaster there, some opportunities for people to get confused about, where can I have my dog? Where should there be a dog-free experience that I shouldn't take my dog? And so we've gone through a period of time just in the last 14 years where we're actually writing a federal regulation that will provide some certainty and clarity about where you can have your dogs and enjoy them and where you can't.
So let me get this right. Are we currently operating under a policy that was written in 1979?
That's correct.
Okay. And so what you're saying is there's been a lot of change since that time, and therefore the policy needs to change along with it.
Correct.
Okay. So now setting that up, I'm going to turn to some of our other guests in the studio. Start with you, Supervisor Wiener. Tell us about how you see this plan and what are some of the responses you have to Superintendent Leonard's opening comments.
Sure. And again, thank you for having me. So I am one of the 21 out of 22 local elected officials in Marin, San Francisco, and San Mateo counties who have come out in opposition to this plan. 21 out of 22 of the people elected to represent the 2 million people living in these three counties are opposed to this proposal. And just to be clear, I'm a big fan of the National Park Service and of the GGNRA and of the superintendent. They have a really hard job managing a lot of land and I think largely do a fantastic job. But we have a real discrete disagreement here, particularly around dog access. And I think it's really important to keep in mind, this is the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It is not your traditional national park, backcountry nature experience. These are lands that are integrated into an urban setting. As the superintendent indicated, that we are growing. We need recreational access. And dog access, people walking their dogs, have been part of these lands for many decades. This is not a new thing. The restrictions that are being proposed will reduce dog access, will reduce areas where you can walk dogs off leash. There are significant restrictions, and I don't begrudge the GGNRA from managing its land and making some changes. They have to be able to do that, but this goes too far, and we're going to see two impacts. First, it's going to impact a lot of people, residents of this region, who rely on these lands to walk their dogs. But it is also going, these dogs are not going to evaporate. They will be pushed into our city parks, which are already experiencing conflicts in our dog play areas. And we see this every time there's a tsunami alert or some problem that causes our coastal areas to be shut down for the day. We see increases in our city parks. And our Recreation and Park Department has expressed concern about these impacts. And so we just don't agree with this proposal. The Board of Supervisors, for the third time in the last 5 years, voted this last Tuesday to oppose the plan. It was a 10-1 vote, and we just have very serious concerns.
So I want to turn to you, to Christine Leonards, to respond to a couple of those comments. So Supervisor Wiener started with making the distinction between a national park and a national recreation area. To your understanding of the NPS code, is there any difference between those two, that nomenclature, or is it just, are they considered the same thing?
In the parlance of the National Park Service, we have about 18 different titles we give units of the National Park System. Battlefield, battlefield site, National Park, National Recreation Area, National Preserve, National Reserve. It's an amazing array, all of which are held to exactly the same standard for preservation and protection. The 1978 Redwoods Amendment that was passed by the Congress and signed into law by the President says that every unit of the National Park System, whether a recreation area or a battlefield, must have as its predominant responsibility the conservation and preservation of the natural and cultural resources of America. And then we also make sure that those units are available for the benefit and the enjoyment of people. So for every 410 units of the National Park Service, the mandate is exactly the same.
So just because it's called a recreation area doesn't mean it's in a heavily populated urban setting doesn't mean there should be a different standard applied here.
There's no different standard applied, but I think an important fact is the law that established the Golden Gate National Recreation Area calls out recreation as an important value in the GGNRA, and that's something that we take seriously, will always be at the heart of Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and is why we're fighting so hard to make sure that this can be the only unit in the national park system that allows dogs off-leash.
And the second point I want you to respond to, and then I'm going to bring in Sally Stevens from the Dog Owners Group, the potential effects of overcrowding of city parks and the effects of this change. What's your take on that? Have you considered that in your planning process?
It is such a key factor, and we know, and I would applaud the City and County of San Francisco, 28 off-leash areas in parks in the City and County of San Francisco for dogs and for dog owners and guardians to go. That's a wonderful model that I think we can learn from, and how you have good signage, how you try to get compliance with picking up pet waste. Those kinds of things are areas where I think our organizations between the San Francisco Recreation and Park Department and in San Mateo County Parks and in Marin County Parks, how we need to think about this as a regional issue, not just an issue of the National Park Service.
But it sounds like not enough to change this.
Not enough to
change this proposal.
Change the proposal.
Right.
We're working hard to meet the objectives that we're trying to do in terms of reducing conflicts between visitors and protect our natural and cultural resources, and we think the proposal does that.
Sally Stevens, chair of the San Francisco Dog Owners Group, I wanted to bring you into the conversation at this point. So your thoughts and reactions to what you've heard so far.
Yeah, this is actually going to be about the largest reduction in recreational access in the GGNRA history. Right now, dogs are allowed on 1% of the land in the GGNRA, only 1%, and this is cutting it by 90%, which means that people who like to enjoy walking with a dog are going to be banned from 99.9% of the GGNRA's land. That's not what I would call balanced. To give you an idea of the scale of what's being lost, the total acres of off-leash area that's being lost in the GGNRA, in other words, where you can go now, but you will not be able to go as a result of this plan, is greater than the total acreage of the legal off-leash areas in all city parks combined. The city parks, yes, there's 28 areas, but there's many of them are very small. And so they cannot handle the overflow of thousands of people with their dogs moving out of the GGNRA. And the thing to keep in mind also is that there's actually no evidence to back up the need for these restrictions. There's been two environmental impact statements done, 5,000-plus pages in the two of them, and there is no solid, substantive, scientific, site-specific evidence that dogs are causing any impacts on the environment, on wildlife, on plants, any of that sort of stuff. I actually have a PhD in astrophysics, so I understand science. I understand what it's all about. And these documents are about as unscientific as you can get. It's not good science at all. You need, if you're going to base a management plan, it needs to be based on actual solid evidence. And these plans are not. You can't base policies, management policies, and especially restricting people to the level that they want to, based on anecdotes or untested assumptions or prejudices or whims, that sort of thing. It has to be based on science, solid scientific evidence, and there is none that dogs have any impacts. The GGRA was, in fact, created for recreation. And, I mean, the enabling legislation is all about it, the legislative history. It was all about recreation. And to the actual quote is to concentrate on serving the outdoor recreational needs of the people of the Bay Area. That's what it was all about. That's what Congress said why it was created. It also, the legislative history knew and assumed that there would be increases in population by significant amounts in the Bay Area in subsequent years. They knew to expect all that, and they wanted it managed for recreation and for all these people that were going to be coming in and using it. In the last couple of years, there's been a shift away from managing for recreation in the GGRA. In fact, there's a new management plan that recreation is no longer a guiding principle. And so the idea that they have to be managed the same isn't quite accurate, because you also have to take into account the enabling legislation. And the enabling legislation is all about recreation. Final thing I'll say just real quickly is that it's not the only place where you can have dogs off-leash in the National Park Service. There's a number of recreation areas where you can have dogs off-leash for hunting.
You mean in other parts of the country?
Other parts of the country.
Okay. Okay. All right. So that's Sally Stevens, chair of the San Francisco Dog Owners Group. Brent Platter, don't worry. We're going to get to you in just a moment, but I need to get Christine Leonards to respond to some of the concerns here around the percentage decrease in access. So 99% decrease, that sounds like a lot. Tell us more about how you see that.
Sure. It does sound like a lot. And I think, frankly, that is a mischaracterization for two reasons. The great majority of lands in GGNRA are not essentially hospitable to visitors or visitors with dogs. We have steep cliffs. We have coastal bluffs. We have scrubland. We have dense vegetation. And so there's just not the opportunity for anyone to recreate in much of GGNRA because it's set aside to protect habitat, to protect resource values. And those areas are simply not accessible. So I don't think you can start with 80,000 acres. The second reason is the National Park Service really only manages one in every 4 acres. So although the exterior boundary of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area includes 80,000 acres, the National Park Service manages 18,500 of those acres. And what we've done is we've really tried to focus on those areas that are popular for visitors in terms of what we've heard of recreation. 31% of the beach miles in GGNRA will be available for dogs, and most of that for dogs off-leash. 34% of the trail miles in GGNRA will be available for visitors with dogs. And we think that's a fair part to share.
And I'm going to go one more round here on recreation area versus park service or national park, excuse me, and the differences in interpretation of what that means here. So this notion from Sally Stevens that, you know, by the fact that it's recreation area, the way it was set up, it was inspired to be a different type of place than a national park, let's say, like Yosemite. Again, one more chance for you to respond to that somehow it's not that it was always like this, is like that there's actually a pivot in the approach of the National Park Service when it comes to what they envision the GGNRA to be.
You know, I think we're blessed in this nation that we have so many national parks. And a third of our national parks are in urban areas, but they are national parks. And each one of them, again, features the same respect and expectation for us to protect those resources. You know, the law that set aside Golden Gate National Recreation Area talks very specifically about preserving it for public use and enjoyment. That's very clear. And it does it in certain areas that possess outstanding natural, historic, scenic, and recreational value. So you can't stop reading the sentence or the law early on. You have to look at the fact that the Congress and the President identified those values: natural, historic, scenic, and recreational.
We're going to pause here for station identification in case you're just joining us. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the new dog management plan for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. We invite you to call in with your questions and comments. We've gotten a number of emails, and we'll try to get to a couple of those as a representative sample of the numbers that we have received. But if you'd like to have your voice heard literally on the radio, the number to dial to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. And again, that's 415-841-4134. You can keep those emails coming at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or tweet us at City Visions KALW. So before I go to Brent Platter, I see Sally, you want to respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that they still are cutting the current access by about 90%. So whether it's 1% of the total or a larger percent, the amount that's being cut is significant. The management approach that they've taken, they're trying to manage these areas as if they were more akin to a remote wilderness area. This really isn't about dogs. It's really not about trying to keep dogs out of places. It's really about keeping people out of places in the GGNRA, because the dogs don't go there by themselves. If you force the dogs out, then you've effectively forced a lot of people out. Their new management plan that they have, the GGNRA has, they want to basically manage most of the GGNRA like it was a remote, pristine wilderness. They talk about low visitor use, controls and access, restrictions on recreational uses, so people can have a solitary visitor experience and can test their outdoor skills. All these in areas that are located, in many cases, within the city limits of a city of 800,000 people. This is an absurd way to manage what is essentially an urban recreation area.
Okay, I want to get Brent Plater into the conversation. You are with Wild Equity, and you oppose the plan. And I purposely didn't ask Christine Leonards to respond to the issue of the level of evidence here, because I wanted to pitch that question first to you, Brent Plater. What is your understanding of the level of evidence that supports these proposed changes?
There's no question that the ad hoc proposal that has been the ad hoc regulations that have been in place at the GGNRA for the past few decades are out of date and need to be revised. And the evidence of this is clear, not just in how off-leash dogs impact wildlife, but also people and our pets. Off-leash dogs at the GGNRA are consistently lost, injured, or killed when they're walked off-leash at this national park, because there are no safe places for dogs to walk off-leash in the GGNRA. Just a few weekends ago, we had another dog go off the cliff at Fort Funston, which required the City of San Francisco's fire department to scale down the cliffs at the fort to rescue the dog. That's something that doesn't happen every day, but it happens on a regular basis. We have dogs running into the road on the highway. Every now and then, they'll be hit by a car because there's not a safe place for the dogs to run off leash there. And we also have people getting impacted in ways you wouldn't expect. What the survey evidence shows us from Dr. Nina Roberts at San Francisco State, who's done a lot of research about ethnic minority participation in the GGNRA, is that disproportionately the GGNRA is not able to keep and attract diverse constituencies in the park because of off-leash dog use having specific impacts on Asian, Latino, and Black communities in particular. And on top of all that, there's evidence that this ad hoc policy that's been in place for all these years is also a violation of the Americans with Disability Act, because the Guide Dogs for the Blind in Marin County, their user group, Guide Dogs Inc., did a survey of their graduates, and what they discovered is that roughly 60% of their graduates have had their dogs interfered with while they were trying to go from point A to point B, and a large number of them had even had their dogs attacked by off-leash dogs. And so because of this, they've informed their graduates that they're not allowed to access places where they know off-leash dogs are roaming. And at this point, the entire GGNRA in San Francisco and large parts of it in Marin County are places where you have to expect off-leash dogs to be roaming because it's a constant factor in the use at those locations. And so what the Park Service has begun to do here, which makes a lot of sense, is to start to put some boundaries on that use so that everybody can decide for themselves if they want to have that experience. If you want to have an off-leash dog experience in the GGNRA, you will have many places where you can do that. You can elect to go into the off-leash dog play areas. And if you want to have an experience where you're just walking your dog on a leash, you can have that too. And if you want to have an experience in certain cases where there won't be dogs, you'll have that as well, but the election will be on the user who is going, and it won't be imposed upon them as it is now just because you've decided to enter the National Park Service. So the evidence of problems here is overwhelming. And when it comes to the wildlife issues, you know, one of the things that's really challenging when you're dealing with endangered species is that as you become more rare, your populations get very low. And so your ability to get scientific surveys completed that have enough data behind them is impaired. It's what we call one of the risks of rarity for endangered species. As you become endangered, it becomes more and more difficult to demonstrate that you are endangered because you can't, that the population is endangered because you just can't see the population enough, get enough samples to get statistically robust evidence. But we know from just going out at Ocean Beach, I mean, I'm a dog owner, and I love my dog as much as anybody, and I know for sure that my dog is much more effective at disturbing shorebirds than I am. I will never be able to move as quickly and as with the same kind of rigorous vigor as my dogs will, chasing dogs up and down the beach, no matter how hard I try. And there's just no question that they're the most significant recreational threat facing shorebirds at the park. And, you know, we need to make space for those birds as well.
Okay. So I just want to summarize the points you made, and then I'm going to have Scott and Sally respond. So the first is you're concerned that the current management plan for dogs can actually cause harm to dogs. The second is people. You mentioned that it skews who goes to the park and who doesn't. And then it's also a violation, as you say, of the American with Disabilities Act, and that you're not necessarily claiming that wildlife is impacted. You're saying that it can't be studied because the numbers are already so low. So I just wanted to summarize those things. Who wants to go first, Scott or Sally?
How about Sally?
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. I think when you look at the issue of safety and incidences, that the number of dog incidents is really a very small percentage of all the incidents in the GGNRA. It's anywhere between 7% and 11%. And the vast majority of those are just for leash violations, not that the dogs were doing anything bad. And the real safety threat in the GGNRA is, frankly, to people, people without dogs that cause problems. You have robberies, rapes, burglaries. You have just about any problem you have in society and cities, you have in the GGNRA. And actually, you have more people that are doing all the same things. There were four times as many people that were cited for being in closed areas than dogs. There were 20 times as many people that were cited for disturbing wildlife than dogs were. So it's the people are really the problem in the GGNRA, not the dogs. With regards to particular injuries, it's very small, very few incidents that happen in the GGNRA. And, for example, the analogy I would think of is like at Vernal Falls in Yosemite. Every year, people die there. They see the signs that they don't go in the water. They go in the water anyway. They go over the cliff and they die. The cable route up Half Dome, almost every year, someone dies falling off of that. And yet nobody talks about banning people from those things or closing down those trails. So I think that the idea that that's a problem is I think it's small, it's minor. Of course, don't want any injuries to anybody, with either human or dogs. And the issue of diversity is an interesting one because the dog walkers in the GGNRA are probably by far the most diverse group of park users. Anyway, you see every age, you'll see every ethnic group, every religion, every economic class, every gay, straight, you name it, they're all there. And they're all getting along, and they're all interacting very nicely without rancor. And there's very few places you see that. Maybe AT&T Park, that's about it. And that's that diversity is what is one of the things of the community of people with dogs in the GGNRA. And ironically, this plan is going to decrease the diversity because it's going to force a lot of these minorities that are now going to the GGNRA and enjoying their time there with the dogs, with their dogs, and they're going to be forced out of the GGNRA. So it's actually going to decrease that. I think that one of the things just to always keep in mind is the uniqueness of the GGNRA. And one of the uniquenesses of the GGNRA is that it's a place where people walk with their dogs.
So, Christine Leonards, did you want to respond here on this issue?
I would be happy to, Joseph. Thank you for the opportunity. One thing that I think is really important is we don't wait for people in parks to die before we put in place protections. And certainly there are natural risks in the world that come with wilderness in places like Yosemite or Mount Rainier or Yellowstone. And, you know, the information that we've been able to compile, for example, from the years 2008 through 2011, there were about 95 people who were either attacked or bitten by dogs in terms of being reported in GGNRA. And we know that it's way underreported. We know it's tremendously underreported. A bit of a striking comment that was made during the public comment period was, even if you tripled or quadrupled that number, it really isn't that very many people being injured or attacked by dogs. I would say that when you talk to the woman who had 200 stitches in her face because she was attacked by a dog, or the woman whose leg was terribly bitten and then infected because she was attacked by a dog, probably wouldn't agree. And I don't know how many is the right number of people we'd accept being bitten or attacked by dogs, but the National Park Service believes you shouldn't have to come to a national park and face the decision about whether or not it's worth it to be bitten by a dog.
I have a question, though. This is it's a corollary to the overcrowding or the increased crowding in the city city parks, if this set of proposals was to go through. What's your sense of the impact? Could potentially you see increase in injuries happening because you're putting dogs in a smaller space?
And one of the things that we've seen really helps in managing dogs who have this aggression is the ability to put them on a leash. And that's a part of what this plan relies on. It does reduce the overall amount of acreage available for dogs off leash. It absolutely does. And it reduces the amount of acreage overall. But we do think that most dog owners are responsible and keep their dogs on leash. That is absolutely one of the best practices you can do to reduce injuries and is a part of what we're trying to put together. The proposal is really meant to provide an opportunity for people to have a safer, cleaner visit to the Golden Gate National Recreation Area.
And Joseph, if I may just add one point on that. You know, San Francisco per square mile has more dog play areas than any other major city in the country, and it's not even close. I mean, the second ranked state city, which is Portland, has about a third of the number of dog parks we do per square mile. The probability of us having an inadequate amount of off-leash dog space because we have some restrictions and some safeguards put in place at the GGNRA really has no evidence behind it whatsoever.
Supervisor Wiener?
Yeah. You know, I think it's important to take a step back here, and Brent's last point is an interesting one. San Francisco is very different than many other parts of the country because, by and large, we don't have backyards. People rely on parks and open space to walk their dogs. They can't just let them out back. Some people have that, but most people don't. And so to compare us, the dog play areas per square mile or per capita to other parts of the country, to most parts of the country, is not a good comparison. And so people rely on our open space. People don't distinguish between whether it's a city park or whether it's a federal property if impacted here, like Fort Funston or Ocean Beach or Crissy Field. People just know this is a park in my city where I've walked my dog for many years. And I think it's really important for people to understand, and I appreciate the superintendent acknowledging this, this plan is going to be a dramatic change. If you walk your dog at Fort Funston or Ocean Beach or Crissy Field or any of these other places, it's going to be a dramatic change for you, and your access is going to be significantly restricted. And we are going to see many more dogs being walked in our city parks. Respectfully to the GGNRA, the analysis of what the impact will be on San Francisco City Parks is pro forma. It's not. It does not go into any kind of real analysis. It pays lip service to it. Our Recreation and Parks Department is concerned And whatever tensions GGNRI is concerned about in its lands are simply going to be exacerbated in our city parks. And that's why it's so important for our local communities or for the federal government to collaborate with our local communities. And even though there have been very open lines of communication, I think that there is a perception in San Francisco and Marin and San Mateo counties that the federal government is just not really listening to our concerns.
So one more station ID break, and then we're going to go to some calls. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the proposed dog management plan for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And we invite you to join us. Right now, there are no free phone lines, so we'll just hold off on that. But you can email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the KLW website or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. Let's go to Cassandra calling from Mill Valley. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to address this notion that somehow this plan is balanced. In Marin especially, so much has been taken away out of 40 trails here. People who choose to legitimately recreate with their dogs now, if this plan goes through, will only have 5 of them, and all the dogs will have to be leashed on those 5 trails. For our off-leash play areas, that's been reduced from 7 to just 1, a small section, as you said earlier in the show, to Rodeo Beach. Rodeo is 30-minute car ride for most people, and it happens to have dangerous surf. In fact, an experienced surfer just died there a few weeks ago. So I guess my question is to Christine Lenhertz. Am I to understand that this is where you're telling families to go with their pets?
And I'm going to have you take your answer off the air so we can open up some phone lines. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Christine Lenhertz.
Hi, Cassandra. Thanks for your call. You know, one of the things that we keep in mind as a unit of the National Park Service is that conservation remains the National Park Service's predominant mandate, which means we seek to avoid or minimize adverse impacts on park resources. Marin County is an example of Park Service lands that are tremendous in their value to wildlife, to conservation, to the natural resources that have been set aside. And that does come into conflict when we have locations that have historically had dogs off leash. We know that there are efforts by Marin County itself and others to make sure that we manage these resources that have sensitive species, that have sensitive habitat. A part of that for us means meeting our objectives by keeping as many dogs on leash as possible, and that means all the trails in the dog management plan will require dogs to be on leash.
We have a phone line open if you want to grab it, 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. Let's go next to Charles. Charles, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from San Francisco, and I would like to respond to a comment Ms. Stevens made about the lack of evidence of the impact of off-leash dogs. I have published scientific articles on the impact of disturbance on shorebirds, and I think it's pretty obvious from Ocean Beach that the impacts are severe. You have dogs chasing the shorebirds up and down the beach, sometimes hundreds and hundreds of yards. If you compare that type of disturbance to other studies, it suggests that impact is very severe. There's really no reason to have to do site-specific studies in that case.
Thanks so much for your call, Charles. Go ahead, Sally Stevens. Would you like to respond?
Yeah, I think that you have to keep in mind that the NEPA law, the National Environmental Protection Act, that governs environmental impact statements, does actually specifically call for site-specific studies. It's not enough to say that, well, it might happen, it could happen, which is what they say in their 5,000-plus page documents, but they don't have any site-specific studies. I think that if you ever have watched people on the beach, they chase the birds as well. I think that one thing that they have never been able to really do, and one of the problems with the studies they have done, is that they can't really say that dogs cause an impact that people don't also cause. And so it's not clear whether it's the dogs or the people that are causing the problem. And that's a real the natural extension is for them to therefore want to ban people from Ocean Beach so that the toddlers don't chase the birds.
So, Christine Leonard, this issue has come up a couple of times so far, which is, you know, is this a dog management plan or a people management plan, or is it both? And then I want you to respond to this the second point, which is the site-specific the requirement for site-specific studies. What's your take on the requirement of the National Park Service?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's true. It's both a dog management plan and a people management plan. And part of that is because we have visitors who kayak, who kite surf, who play volleyball, who go for picnics, who go for hikes, who go for runs. And all of those visitors are interested in an opportunity to recreate in GGNRA. And so what we're trying to do is balance those opportunities for all folks who have an interest to recreate to do so in a happy, safe environment. That's really important. When the National Park Service makes decisions, we really rely on three primary criteria. One is using our best available sound science. The second one is accurate fidelity to the laws that we have to implement. And the third is really making sure we keep in mind long-term public interest. So it's not just science. It's not just public interest. It's always the law. But those are really our three criteria. And there are numerous studies that we rely on that document disturbance to wildlife, for example, in particular.
That are site-specific.
That are not site-specific. Okay. That are about what are the effects that have been reviewed, analyzed, and then published. We have 10 studies that point to effects that happen between the interactions of dogs and wildlife. Again, not site-specific to the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, but which we essentially use as proxies that say, if this is analyzed, scientifically collected, and evaluated data, we believe it has great application. Now, there are fewer studies around vegetation damage and soil compaction. In large part, it's a difficult area to study because almost never do you have recreational areas where dogs are separated from humans. So it is less science that's out there in the world. But those are the types of scientific studies and information that we're using as a part of our decision-making framework.
Brent Plater, I wanted to go to you on this point. Christine Leonard thinks that the non-site-specific studies are generalizable to this area. Do you agree with her, and why?
Absolutely, and I think one of the key elements that might thread the needle here, and something that we're hoping to see added to the rule as it becomes finalized, is to have some basic safeguards in place at each of these off-leash dog play areas so that we can ensure that there is some form of physical boundary between the areas where dogs will be allowed to roam off-leash and the areas where the leash laws will be enforced. In the absence of having some sort of physical barrier between those areas, we're going to have this constant confusion, which leads to bad data, bad enforcement, an inability to identify the differentiation of different problems. And I think that's one of the crucial things that still needs to be addressed by the proposed rule. I think in general, the proposed rule is moving in the right direction. But unless we can get some sort of physical barrier around each of these off-leash dog play areas, and that could be a fence, it could be shrubbery, it could be just using the natural features of some of those locations, we're going to continue to have these conflicts between people who want to run their dogs off-leash and people who are just trying to enjoy their day in other ways at the national park.
So what I'm hearing is that you think this proposed rule doesn't go far enough in terms of it doesn't have enough specificity around how there's going to be a discrimination between these different areas, or delineation, I should say.
There has to be some sort of physical barrier between the off-leash dog play area and the rest of the areas of the national park in order for those off-leash dog play areas to be safe for the people who want to elect into one or the other of those kinds of activities, for our dogs so they don't run away and go into traffic or fall off a cliff, and for wildlife so that there will be areas where they will have eventually some sense where they'll be less likely to be disturbed by off-leash dogs.
Okay. And then Sally Stevens, a quick response, because I have a few more calls I want to get to. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just the issue of fences is an interesting one, because the Park Service years ago, when there was a negotiated rulemaking process, specifically said no fences. People don't like to go to a national park and see fences, even vegetation barriers. It's compartmentalizing what we want to be an open space. And I think that that's not particularly popular.
Okay.
And, you know, just one point on that.
There,
you know,
quick
what's
there.
Happened in the absence of having some enclosure around these off-leash dog play areas. What the Park Service has been required to do is start enclosing the natural features at the park. So, for example, at Christie Field right now, if you go out there and try to observe one of the threatened species, the snowy plover, there's a fence around an area they call the Wildlife Protection Area, enclosing the snowy plover area, which is, to me, this absurd proposition where we're transforming this national park into a zoo-like experience where, in order to observe the wildlife, you got to go up to the fence and look in. That's the opposite of what the National Park Service is supposed to be doing. What they should be doing is taking the things that are threatening these outstanding, remarkable values of the National Park Service and enclosing them so that they are unlikely to impair those resources, so future generations of San Franciscans will be able to enjoy them just like you and me.
Quickly, to reintroduce the program, City Visions 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at KLW.org. I'm Joseph Pache. Tonight we're talking about the controversial dog management plan for the Golden Gate National Recreation Area with our guests, Supervisor Scott Wiener from the Board of Supervisors here in San Francisco, Sally Stevens, Chair of the San Francisco Dog Owners Group, Christine Lennertz, Superintendent of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, and Brent Plater of Wild Equity. We have a couple of phone lines open, 415-841-4134 to join our conversation. Otherwise, you can email us at cityvisionskalw.org or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. Let's go next to Starchild in San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm concerned. The feds, I think, here are really out of control. You know, this is the same agency that tried to ban fires throughout the winter on Ocean Beach and require people any time of the year who wanted to have a fire out on the beach, which has traditionally been, an area where people could do that, to buy permits in advance. You know, and they've been proposing all kinds of other rules and stuff where this land was entrusted by the people of San Francisco to the federal government, and I don't think they're upholding their end of the contract. They're using our tax dollars as well to emphasize these plans that they propose and then advocate for those plans, injecting themselves into the public dialogue in a non-neutral way. You know, I don't think that's appropriate for government agencies. I think they should just propose the policies and then step back, you know, not use our tax money to advocate for their particular point of view on it. And I think they're trying to micromanage people more and more and take more and more control of our lives. And, you know, I'm not a dog owner, but I absolutely think this plan is terrible and needs to be rejected.
Thank you for a call. Let's go next to Mark from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. And my question is for Supervisor Wiener. I'm really quite puzzled how the supervisor and his colleagues at City Hall have essentially turned their back on the citizens who don't want to be approached by off-leash dogs. I've seen people absolutely terrified at places like Ocean Beach because off-leash dogs are even friendly, running around them, wanting to play with them, and these people are begging the owners to take the dog away. We've heard from Chris that there are instances of pretty severe attacks. And my guess is even with the restrictions that are in place, we'll continue to see attacks. And I understand that dog owners, and I've been one for many, many years, we love having dogs off-leash in proper places, but we also run the risk of these dogs damaging people, attacking and terrifying children. And yet the city supervisors seem to say dog owners take precedence over terrified citizens, and I'd like a response to that, please.
Thanks for your call, and I'll have you take your answer off the air. Go ahead, Supervisor Wiener.
So I don't agree that that's what the supervisors have done, and keep in mind this is not some sort of divided vote. We've had two votes that have been 10-1 and one that's been unanimous. Mayor Lee has also sent a letter reiterating the position that the Board of Supervisors has taken. At no point have I or I don't think any of my colleagues ever stated that the GGNRA should not make any changes or manage its land or enforce the law. Obviously, we need to have well-managed parks, whether it's city parks or federal parks. But the reality is that there are a lot of people who rely on these lands to walk their dogs and have for many, many years. And this is not just a recalibration or a mild restriction. This is a dramatic reduction in the available dog-related or dog-accessible space. And so it's one thing for the federal government to come in and say, hey, we need to do an adjustment. This is not an adjustment. This is an extreme change, and that's why we're involved. And I will also say, and I've had many conversations with constituents about this, that for people who are concerned about there being too many dogs in parks, again, these dogs are not going to evaporate. They're going to still be here, and they will be in our city parks instead.
I want to get to some emails here. We have an email from Lisa. Thousands of people in the Bay Area walk their dogs every day as their primary form of exercise, recreation, and socializing. It is a remarkably egalitarian form of recreation which cuts across lines of age, race, economic means, and physical activity. Ability. Leashes and fencing make it impossible for most people to get the exercise that they and their canine companions need. We have another email from Laura in Muir Beach. Muir Beach, which is surrounded by the GGNRA, is going to lose all of its trails and fire road access for people with dogs, even on a leash. There will be not a single trail to use in or around Muir Beach with a dog, even on leash. This is an extremely popular gateway trailhead for the fire roads of the Marin Headlands. How can the Park Service justify this drastic cut to access to fire roads that their own trucks drive up and down? We have another here email, not attributed to anybody. It says, in recent years, the private nonprofit GGNRA Parks Conservancy has chosen highly visited sites within the GGNRA for species reintroduction, and then the Park Service has used the presence of those newly introduced species as justification for the removal of people with dogs. Muir Beach and the red-legged frog is one prime example. So just from a smattering of the more than 30 emails we've received, most of the emails seem to be against this proposal. We seem to be getting a couple of different points of view from the callers that we're getting. I want to get in a couple more calls here. Who do we have? Is that you, Brent, who wants to chime in?
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the key ways for us to resolve this dispute is it's not really about the number of dogs per se that are visiting the GGNRA that is of concern. What's of concern is the impacts that are being had by the animals and by the people that are there. And the best way to differentiate these kinds of impacts so they can be in places where they can be well managed is to have some kind of physical enclosure around these off-leash dog play areas. I mean, this is basic 101 dog safety requirement for safe off-leash dog play areas. You get double gates with a physical enclosure and a clear set of rules about how people will behave inside those off-leash dog play areas, and you have a very easy way to reduce the number of conflicts that are happening in the park, no matter how many dogs end up visiting those areas.
So, Brent, I have an email directed at you that I'd like you to respond to from Dave in San Francisco, who says, please, please, please do not let the notion by Brent Plater stand that the GGNRA lacks diversity because Asians, Latinos, and African Americans are scared of dogs. That is absurd and offensive.
You know, I'm just reporting the facts that were put together by a report from Dr. Nina Roberts at San Francisco State University on ethnic diversity and ethnic user experiences at the GGNRA. This is based on a series of surveys that she did both inside and outside the park to try and understand why the GGNRA doesn't have the diverse constituency of users that it would like to have. And what that survey found, among other factors, was that off-leash dogs is one of the most common reasons that Latino, Asian, and Black users of the GGNRA cited as impairing their use of the landscape. So if they want to take evidence, argue with the evidence, that's up to them, but that's the way those things are panning out.
Sally Stevens, brief reply there.
Yeah, the report that he's referring to is actually just a report on some focus groups, less than 100 people. And at the end of it, they have like 30 suggestions for how to increase the number of minorities or why minorities would come to the GGNRA. Dogs aren't even mentioned at all in any of the conclusions of the report.
Okay, let's go next to, Mark in San Francisco. Mark, welcome to the program. Okay. I hear that we don't have Mark. So let's go to Suzanne from Valencia. Welcome to the program, Suzanne.
Hello, my name's Suzanne. Yes, I wanted to comment on some of the disputes that seem to be arising here regarding evidence and science. And one of the things that I find very disturbing is that there is a very specific set of rules as to how policy changes are made in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. They actually apply to all of the Park Service properties. And the first part of the rule is that there's supposed to be something called vital monitoring, which means the GGNRA actually keeps track of their resources within this park area. And by doing the vital monitoring, they are able to identify the areas that have a problem, whether, you know, something's being degraded or whatever. And what I find really disturbing, and why I think most people are upset about this that use the GGNRA for recreation, is that in 2006, when the GGNRA announced their plans to do a change to the dog management plan, I actually sent in a Freedom of Information Act request to find out what studies, what reports, what staffing they had, any observations, whatever, would indicate that there was a problem with dogs. And their response was that they had absolutely nothing.
Okay.
So basically, they started this whole process with no evidence to support the fact that there's even a problem here to start out with.
Okay, Suzanne, thanks so much for that. I'm going to have Christine Leonard's reply. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. You know, one of the things that that we do as we manage natural and cultural resources is we have to comply with laws like the Endangered Species Act. We know that in GGNRA we have a number of species that are threatened or endangered. And our responsibility is to preserve not just those places where we know we have those populations, but those places where we could potentially have those populations. So we have numbers of areas in all three counties where we have the responsibility to do that. So, for example, the Mission Blue Butterfly, which is an endangered species. We are responsible through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to make sure we protect the habitats where those species could exist in the future. And that is by law, it is by requirement, and it is by conservation ethics. So that's an example of where we use our discretion to protect the habitats in the park.
Okay, we have an email from Shannon who says, as a dog trainer, I can tell you that enclosed dog play areas are among the most dangerous places for dogs to play. I want to also, we're less than 3 or 4 minutes in the program, but I want to get one more call in. Let's go to Jackie in San Francisco. Jackie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just want to respond to Scott Wiener's comment that there were that we have the most amount of parks of any city in the country that allow dogs off leash. I'm wondering, when will we know if we have too many dogs in our urban area? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks very much, Jackie. Supervisor Wiener?
Yeah, I think it was Brent that actually said that, and we had a discussion about that. But in terms of when will we know, the government doesn't tell people when they can have a dog or not have a dog. People make choices about whether they're going to have a dog, whether they're going to have a cat, whether they're going to have a bike or whatever else that they decide they're going to do. And what we do have to do as a city is recognize the reality of the people living in our city and try to balance various conflicts on our public lands as best we can. And it's important to do that, and I know it's important for the National Park Service to do that, but we have to do it in a reasonable way. And when you have so many people relying on these lands to walk their dogs and you have this kind of restriction, it's going to cause unintended consequences for our city parks, and it's going to really harm a lot of people.
So, Sally Stevens, brief closing comment here. Is there any midway point here? Is there any compromise that you could propose a couple of ideas?
I think that...
briefly.
Yeah. What's interesting is that the Park Service has pretty much been unwilling to compromise on any of this. Throughout this whole process, there have been three plans that have been put forward. There's been basically no change from plan to plan, despite overwhelming public opposition to the plan at each stage of this process. And I think that even if you don't like dogs or don't want dogs in parks, you should be concerned about this flawed process that we're going through to basically restrict where people can go.
And last word for you, Christine Leonard's. What did you take from tonight's conversation? What will you take back to your colleagues in the morning about how people around the Bay Area are feeling about this proposed change?
One of the things that we know, which is a great opportunity for us to plug, and I'm going to do it shamelessly right now, is that there's an opportunity for the public to weigh in on the proposed rule through May 25th. So if people will go to regulations.gov on the web, they can submit comments. And that process is meant to have people give us information, give us feedback, give us specifics about what we've proposed for what will become a regulation, we hope, by the end of the year. So really, the takeaway, I think, tonight is the invitation for people beyond who we just heard from tonight and who are here with us tonight to weigh in on this topic.
So as opposed to what Sally Stevens is saying, is there actually room for negotiation here?
Yes, absolutely. And we have public meetings, three this week and three next week. We're going to outline what's changed from the supplemental EIS, what's new. We've added four trails in San Mateo, things like that where we can get into more detail.
All right. Well, that's City Visions for this evening. My guests were GGNRA Superintendent Christine Lennertz, San Francisco Supervisor Scott Wiener, San Francisco Dog Owners Group Chair Sally Stevens, and by phone we were joined by Executive Director of Wild Equity Brent Plater. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Ann Harper. I'll be back next Monday. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.
Let the dogs out!
This is KLW San Francisco. News from a Canadian perspective is coming up next. It's the CBC's As It Happens. The time is 8 o'clock.